Okay, so welcome again, everybody. Let's see, how is everyone tonight? Yeah, do the preschool check-in. Thumbs, okay, way up over there. So-so over here. Good, good. Iris and Kat, front and center at home. Oh, yeah. All right. Well, it's a perfect topic for tonight. So the topic is energy and effort. And just being in this space with this sense of like newness and freshness, I can feel a different energetic quality in myself. So not assuming that it's the same for you, but the topic feels just right for tonight. So I know Tim spoke a little bit about it last week, so maybe you already have your own experiments and adventures in effort and energy already from this week. But the Pali word for this parami, or this quality of heart that we're encouraged to cultivate, give attention to, investigate. The Pali word is called virya. Virya. And I love talking about it because of all of the qualities. This is one where my experience and understanding of it has changed so much, so dramatically from when I first started practicing 20 some years ago. So when I first started giving talks, virya was one of the first things I talked about, and I remember Googling the word virya just to look up the definition, and up came advertisements for male sexual enhancement products because virya and virility somehow share the same root, right? So, don't let your mind go too far with that, there are so many different translations of it, but classically, this tradition emphasizes this heroic, courageous quality of virya. So, a kind of marshaling of one's energy and resources, and this kind of courageous, heroic effort. Right? So, I had a really hard time relating to that early on in my practice. I did not feel courageous, I did not feel heroic. I was really just trying to get through the day without crying, basically. So I couldn't relate to this quality. But I do think of it as kind of like our juice. Where does our juice for practice come from? Yeah. So it's talked about as both energy and effort. So sometimes we get really overly involved with the effort part and forget about what we're actually applying or directing when we're applying effort. It's this raw resource of energy. Yeah, so someone says, I have the energy for this, or I don't really have the energy for this right now. We're talking about something energetic, but we're also talking about effort. So they're connected, related, but I want to talk a little bit about the energetic capacity first tonight. But also to talk about or mention different traditions translate this term a little bit differently, and this has been helpful. So, in the early Buddhist tradition, sometimes this courageous, heroic effort is emphasized. In some of the Mahayana traditions, Tibetan traditions, It's translated as, the same quality of virya is translated as a joyful endeavor. Yeah. Or enthusiastic perseverance. Okay. Isn't that quite different? There's a kind of a zeal or like a wholehearted engagement kind of quality to it. So when I started considering it from this light, it made a little more sense to me. Joyful endeavor, enthusiastic perseverance. The words joyful and effort, I didn't know could go together. Joyful and effort. How do those, so there's a koan. How do those go together? Joyful effort. So some of you know, when I first shared this story a bit before, but when I first started practice, I was in my early 20s and was having what I can recognize now, and what they, I don't know if they even use this term anymore, but a quarter life crisis. It wasn't a midlife crisis, it was a quarter life crisis. And it was a crisis of effort. Yeah, because I had always done what I was supposed to do to get to the next thing I was supposed to get to. And I did very well at that, right? The next hoop, the next milestone, the next threshold. And I got to college almost all the way through before having the recognition that, oh, this way of using effort, this doesn't end. Yeah? There's no finish line. There's no, you get here and then you can rest. You know, it's the next, it's always the next thing to work for, to marshal one's energy for. You know, the next test, the next paper, the next job, the next resume thing, the next accomplishment, the next whatever, this marshaling one's energy for something, and then finally getting a little bit of a break and then having to do it all over again. So many of us can recognize this pattern to our energy. It's like strain, 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 collapse. Push, 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 break. Yeah, strain, 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 collapse. So this is kind of what I was experiencing. So it was this sort of energetic collapse combined with the recognition that this isn't sustainable as a pattern throughout life, right? There's no end point. So I started asking myself, because I'd lost the energy to be able to apply myself in that same way. It just gave out. So I started having to ask myself different questions. And I realized that there wasn't anything that I really liked doing for its own sake. Not to get something out of it, or not to get to the next thing. But just for the love of doing it. And so I realized there was very few things that I could put in that category, but I wanted to start to find out, is there a way to use my effort and attention differently so that I'm not straining and then breaking, or pushing and then collapsing? So how do you use your attention and energy in a way that it continues to circulate, where it could actually be enjoyable, but also refreshing and nourishing as you're doing it? So this was the question that kind of, or questions that led me into practice, and into different ways of understanding and working with my own mind. So energy is really like a fire. You know, I think we can compare it to a lot of different qualities. There are some fires in this practice that we want to extinguish or not feed. You know, fires of greed, hatred, and delusion. We want to work on not feeding those flames. But there are certain, you know, fires that we want to keep kindled, that we want to continue to nourish and feed. We want to know how they stay lit. So that's kind of what this quality of energy and the way that we apply that energy speaks to. Is there a way that we can kind of keep our pilot light lit, right? So it doesn't keep going out. Yeah. So I was teaching in the Tri-Cities this past weekend, and I often notice this when I have long drives or when we start off with any endeavor that has a long duration to it, right? Any trip or project or new undertaking. The very beginning of the drive, there's often a lot of enthusiasm, right? It's sunny, it's just me in the car, no dogs, no kids, I'm just, you know, going. The sun is shining, there's a lot of enthusiasm and energy, right? But after, you know, crossing the mountains, the terrain is pretty flat, not much new is happening, the energy starts to wane a little bit, right? So just noticing these fluctuations in energy, and it's easy to start to push against or work against our own natural tendencies. So there's a balance in the practice between like supporting a natural continuity of energy and trying to like pump something out or make something happen that isn't there. All right. So it's, I think, interesting to notice where in the course of an activity, like in the course of a workday, or in the course of a project that you're undertaking, or anything that has some duration, where does our energy flag? Right? Where does inertia kind of set in? We might notice this in the middle of a sitting practice. There might be a lot of inertia just to get to the cushion. So I know for me, definitely been in a lot of periods where the biggest resistance was just getting to the cushion. Yeah. If I could get there, it was okay. It was pretty much okay. But getting there was a lot of the inertia resistance. For other people, or for others of us at different times, it's the energy to stay once we're actually there. Yeah. So we're there, we're set up, you know, we have this beautiful motivation we've undertaken, and then energy starts to flag, right? Or wane. For others, it might be really difficult to finish things, right? We might have a lot of energy, enthusiasm, joy at the beginning, maybe sustaining through the middle, but can be very difficult to actually complete or finish. So the first invitation with effort and energy is just to notice your fluctuating levels. Yeah. How does this naturally fluctuate during the day? Yeah. What increases it? What decreases it? Yeah. What inspires? What deflates? Yeah. So attention and energy are very closely linked together. A really direct experience of that is when we bring awareness very deeply into the body. So the first foundation of mindfulness, letting awareness come really deeply into the body. So it's, you know, steeping, pervading, permeating our body. What do we notice when we do that? We notice that the body wakes up. Yeah? The natural energy and vitality in the body wakes up. It does that because it's not being diverted or dispersed or diffused. It's not going out. So if we make a continuous effort to bring awareness back into the body, it's not getting spun out in thought, in pushing, trying to get to the next thing. It's just continually feeding back into itself. So the energy can start to balance and rise. So I know many of you have noticed this to some degree. You can even notice it right now in your hands, right? So listen to me and be aware of your hands at the same time. So we can choose where we put our attention. So bringing your awareness into your hands right now for a moment, just fully into your hands. You can notice whether they're warm or cool. You might notice the texture of whatever it is that you're touching. You might notice the heaviness of them. And then you can feel them from the inside. So one teacher asked this question, how would I know I have a hand without looking at it or thinking about it? Attention goes into our hands. And maybe there's a sense of increased vitality or increased sensations in our hands just from that simple shift of attention. So where we place our attention, energy starts to gather. So we can do that with the hands. We can do that in the whole, with our whole body. But it's simple, but it's quite profound what's happening in those moments. In one sense, our vital kind of natural resource of energy is not getting diffused or dispersed, right? It's just staying right there. So it's not really what we're doing, it's almost what we're not doing. Yeah. We're not getting up every time we feel like getting up. We're not acting on every impulse. We're not following every stream or train of thought. So the energy builds up. When we're sitting, this leads to a state of gatheredness in which body, heart, mind start to come together in a kind of gatheredness of attention and energy, sometimes called concentration. But it doesn't just have to happen when we're sitting. Right? It happens any time that we are not being pulled out, spun around, anytime we're not losing energy by way of the hindrances. So we can practice this in daily life as well. So it takes a certain amount of energy to do this, right? It takes a certain amount of energy to kind of restrain, to keep coming back, to remember to be aware, that takes a certain amount of energy and effort. At some point, when that gains momentum, when that gains a kind of continuity or momentum, then it's as though that becomes more and more effortless, right? So it's like the energy is sustaining us, right? Awareness is naturally there. We don't have to remind ourselves. We don't have to refresh it. We don't have to bring ourselves back. We might go for periods of time in which it's fluid, open, continuous. We're not getting diverted. Okay. So a lot of our effort is in kind of knowing what our internal conditions are, knowing what our patterning is, and knowing how to apply effort gently but persistently in a way so that our practice can gain momentum naturally. Right? So this is a lot of work with the hindrances. So there are a bunch of examples I could use for this, but them is so my son is obsessed with ships. He's been obsessed with ships for years, particularly ship disasters, like when things go wrong, the mechanics of why ships sink and what they look like when they're destroyed, you know, in parts. Anyway, it's too much information, but anyway, I know more about maritime conditions than I should. and of course, when you're doing that, everything is dharma, right? So I start to see all of this as dharma. So we have this practice when he's trying something new or doing something that seems hard or trying to arouse motivation. There's something, many of you probably know this better than I do, but there's a condition that people who are, there's a current when boats are trying to get out into the open ocean. There's a bar, right, that you have to cross, which is a really strong current, like breakers, that until you get out past that bar, it's very kind of hazardous, dramatic, challenging, because you're going against all of these currents, right? And so you have to really be skillful to know how to work with all of these challenging currents. But once you get out past that bar, there are still currents, there's still weather, but not only have you gained skill in kind of working with that intensity, you're able to work with those conditions and currents in a much more fluid, natural way. So storms might still come, but until you know how to kind of get past that bar, it feels extremely challenging to trust that there's anything on the other side of that, right? So you can think about that whenever we're trying anything new. So this is how I talk about it with my son, with things that are difficult, like handwriting or trying a new sport or meditating. Just make the effort to get past that bar. And to get past that, there's a sense that you know how to work with your own energetic system in a way that is skillful and helpful. So the parami right before virya is wisdom. It's this discernment, knowing what's helpful when, knowing what to do when. This saves a tremendous amount of energy to know what to do when. Right. So to start to get a sense of our own kind of energetic patterning, where we lose energy, where we're struggling, where we're fighting, where we're getting diffuse. So we can notice if we're sitting and there's a lot of wanting present, wanting a better meditative experience, wanting to get to the next moment. We can notice this while we're sitting, can notice this during the day, experience this as a tremendous amount of tension being generated inside. Yeah, be able to feel that constriction happening. So a wise use of energy is to feel that and to know how to soften, relax, invite a sense of resting back with one's energy, resting back, leaning back, inviting ease. Yeah, so that's a balance. But that's a very different wise use of energy than somebody who sits and your energy just sinks. Yeah? Just sinks. You sit down and it's like not quite lights out, but just a drooping, dreary, dull feeling. Right? Murky. So we're not quite sure what it is that we're aware of. Yeah. So what's needed? What's needed there? I'll talk about specifics for what encourages energy in a minute. But first, we have to kind of take the temperature or read where our energy is, where it leaks out. So every thought takes energy. Even if it's a beautiful, inspiring thought, this wonderful plan of this wonderful project we're going to do, it takes energy, right? It takes energy to follow it, and then it takes energy to come back. So we can sense that. We can sense how worry spins us around and spits us back out. Yeah. Can notice one of my very familiar patterns is when there's discomfort or when there's challenge, is that energy gets very diffuse. All right, so it's almost like you lose the body awareness completely. Yeah, it gets kind of diffuse and vague and hazy. So again, not quite sure what you're aware of, and there's no sense of a center in the body at all. Yeah, there's no sense of kind of activating one's own kind of resource of energy for the task at hand, because it's a kind of vague seeping out. Yeah. So sometimes we get wrapped up in other people, what they're doing, what they should be doing, what are they needing, what's happening over here, what about over there, well, what about this and what about that? And very diffuse, vague. Yeah. So what's happening here? So calling ourselves back. What's happening here? When we can really start to get a sense of this is where our greatest resources are, right here, our attention, our energy, right here, we're so much more skillful at directing them. Yeah. So this is, maybe you're getting a sense, we can gain a lot of skillfulness with this. It's not one size fits all. So sometimes when we think about effort, we think, oh, it just means I need to try harder. And I definitely had this. I just need to put in more effort. I just need to try harder. And then we find that we're back in that kind of push, 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 ugh, push, 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 collapse. So one of my teachers says, or then sometimes we'll conclude that, okay, that way of using effort doesn't work at all, so I'll just give up completely. Yeah? Well, But one of my teachers says the opposite of striving effort is not no effort. It's not no effort. It's wise effort. It's attuning yourself to the conditions, inwardly, outwardly. If our energy is really, really low, it's still possible to have a gentle, kind, continuous, vital energy happening. Yeah. Quality of attention happening. We don't have to pump ourselves up. We don't have to, make something energetic happen. We can still have a quite vibrant but soft kind of ongoing continuity. So you can kind of have to get a feel for this. But one way of checking in is to kind of ask yourself, get in the habit of asking yourself, like, what is the quality of my energy this moment? Yeah. And asking and examining or investigating kind of its texture, as though you're checking the weather or checking a current, right? So maybe it feels diffuse, maybe it feels pushy, and maybe it feels like it's hanging back or withdrawn or contracted or tight. Yeah. So getting a sense and then looking at kind of what is required in the environment, with the task at hand, what you're doing. And is it possible to kind of harmonize or bring those things together? So the famous example that the Buddha used for energy and effort is the tuning of a musical instrument. All right. So this is his description to somebody who is trying to explore how to use their effort and practice. It says the person was a musician and said, "What played a lute? So when the strings on your lute are too tight, what kind of sound does it make?" Maybe some guitar players know this. Sharp, yeah, tight, sharp, maybe like a twang. Or not a twang, but something sharp. But a little discordant. If they're too loose, it's more of that twang, that not quite right, not quite in tune. When we bring our attention and energy into the present moment's experience, notice what it's like. Notice what's happening inside and what we're doing outside. It is like that tuning of an instrument in which we play a note. We start doing something. We notice what it's like. Yeah. Bring our awareness inside. Notice that quality. Notice what it's like. And then we can start to adjust, not in a way that we're constantly tweaking all the time, but we're adjusting by noticing what helps sustain awareness, helps sustain energy. All right, so there are a lot of things that give rise to energy, because this quality appears in almost every list. We need some degree of energy and effort in order to do anything. But we can notice what things give rise to it. Yeah. Again, a kind of heartfelt, joyful endeavor, right? Doesn't always have to be bubbly and exuberant, but some sense of wholeheartedness. Yeah? So confidence can give rise. What we have trust in So I know early on for me, I didn't have a lot of trust in my own practice, but I had a lot of trust in other people, other teachers, other teachings, Sangha. So you might notice the way in which trust gives rise to energy or willingness to engage. Yeah. This quality of knowing what's helpful, knowing what isn't, conserving our energy, knowing what's what we need to kind of refrain from and what we can wholeheartedly move into. Yeah. The other thing, and I mentioned this during the wisdom talks, is asking questions, right? Inquiry. So as a factor of awakening, energy arises when we're aware and curious, asking questions. So this is a way of using our effort and energy really differently than when we're sucked into habit. Okay? So this is the courageous part. This is kind of getting past the bar, is being willing to experiment with using our energy in a different way than we're used to. Right? So if we're sinking or dull, we might experiment with how we position our bodies, with what we put our attention on, with opening our eyes, yeah? With establishing more kind of trust, confidence, interest. Yeah. So if we're getting sucked into familiar patterns over and over and over again that disperse and distort our energy, it takes tremendous courage to experiment. What happens if I go a slightly different way, do something a little bit different? So just to say that the breathing is a tremendous resource in this. So mindfulness of breathing, anapanasati, right? So bringing mindfulness to the in and out breathing. So pana is derived from the same word as prana in Sanskrit. So it's not just the movement of breath, but also the movement of energy, of anicca throughout the body, movement of sensations and experience throughout the body. So once energy does start to gather momentum, I just wanted to read this really briefly. So this is from Sayadaw Tejaniya, who talks a lot about momentum in a way that is really helpful, I think. Like when our effort, when our awareness gains momentum. It says, momentum is also one aspect of nature that we can make use of. If we continuously cultivate a wholesome quality of mind, that wholesome quality will become stronger, and it will come more naturally to the mind. It will become a habit of the mind, and it can become a power. This is what I call momentum. Something that we're cultivating becomes strong enough to live on its own, like the mindfulness remembering to remember on its own. Mindfulness coming naturally and having a momentum that it keeps remembering to be mindful without putting in so much effort. That's momentum. Understand this nature of how momentum can be gained so that we can relaxingly do something repeatedly and make it powerful. Yeah. Okay, so that goes on, but maybe you can get a sense both of the courage that it takes to work with really strong energetic patterns that are conditioned to go in a certain direction, and then of what's possible when we gain some skill with that And when this quality of energy gains some momentum, it becomes a strength, becomes a power, it becomes more continuously available to us, right? So then this quality that seemed so elusive to me, like enthusiasm, I could actually start to get a sense of that, yeah? So the spiritual teacher Eckhart Tolle has a beautiful teaching about forms of awakened doing that kind of speaks to this quality of effort. And he said, often when we're doing something where we're noticing a lot of challenge or unpleasantness, a form of awakened doing, or I would say kind of wise energy or effort, is just acceptance. Not just, but acceptance that this is the current that's moving through at this particular moment. I don't have to fight it. I don't have to follow it. But this is the current that's moving through. He gives the example of somebody changing a tire in the middle of the night in the pouring rain. You're probably not going to experience enthusiasm for that task. Maybe, but maybe not joyful effort, but you can experience not fighting that, your energy not fighting itself or buckling or straining, some kind of acceptance to that. But he said more and more we can experience that when we're wholeheartedly engaged in something, not half here, half there, half into it, half doubting it. Right? Half into it, half caught up somewhere else. When we're wholeheartedly engaged in something kind of wholesome and helpful, healthy and helpful, more and more that has a sense of joyful effort, effort that replenishes our energy naturally. So you might consider when you experience this, you know, sometimes in our like volunteer work, or in our art, or in doing something that we deeply care about that is also helpful, we can experience this kind of joyful effort and notice when it becomes strain. And then the third form of awakened doing is enthusiasm, right? This is where that joyful effort meets vision. These are his words. When we're engaged in some endeavor that with a group that has some sense of potential benefit that we can't control or plan or strategize completely, but we have a sense of moving together in a helpful direction. And this is really what we do, what we access often as Sangha. Moving in a helpful direction together with an eye on where we're headed, right? Where the practice points. So that gives a tremendous amount of energy. So it's not just me here battling the hindrances, you know, day after day. It becomes extremely purposeful and collective and shared. Yeah. Our efforts feel worthwhile and meaningful, yeah, even though we can't always sense exactly how it's going to unfold. Often we can't sense exactly how it's going to unfold, but there is the sense of being part of a wider movement of practice, wider direction. Okay. Let's sit together for a moment. So without even having to shift your posture too much, you might just kind of check the weather again. Notice. So before we even make that into something that we would label a state, boredom, restlessness, calm, we can experience it as just a quality that's present right now, an energetic quality in the heart, body, mind. So thank you for your sustained application of effort in being attentive to the talk. I have a lot of energy for this topic, so sometimes I go longer. But next time, we'll talk about low energy states specifically and how we might navigate them. So boredom, procrastination, what we might call laziness. So if that isn't exciting to come back for next week, I don't know what is. But before we close for tonight, I'd love to hear just a few of your comments and reflections. And if it's possible to stay until people have asked and finished reflecting, that would be great. Yeah, just a few brief comments or questions. Yeah.
I'm incredibly aware of how I go in and out of paying attention to you. I could hear things and then I'd be off and then I'd come back and I'd be like, oh shit, I just missed a whole bunch. But it was... It's a practice to get there. But I'm also wondering if you have any tips about listening to others while maintaining your own energy. Yeah. And where that goes.
Yeah, it's a beautiful question, if everyone could hear. And I think if we took a poll in terms of how many people's attention and energy went out and then came back and went out and came back, I think you would not be alone in that. And part of what's helpful in that is to, when we notice that, be able to really preference, and celebrate's probably too strong, but really enjoy the coming back, you know, apart from what I'm saying and whether you like it or don't or whatever, but really start to enjoy that, enjoy the noticing, like, oh, there I go. Oh, interesting. Okay, where'd I go? Interesting. And enjoy the feeling of coming back to yourself, because that's what's happening. You're coming back, not to me, you're coming back to yourself and your life in that moment. And so that starts to set up kind of a positive feedback loop where you actually want to come back. So a huge part of energy is this like wholesome desire, this like we want to be here for ourselves and others. Yeah. And a lot of us can feel a lot of motivation to show up for other people. Yeah. To show up when someone we know is in distress, often we're like right there. Yeah. All of our attention and energy is there. So I think as we're investigating it, just to notice, in what arenas do we feel like, oh, there's a wholehearted willingness to be there. Even if we could spin off, there's an interest in coming back and an appreciation in coming back. Yeah, so that's what supports that. And then as we start to bring more awareness to the body, we can start to enjoy. It actually feels much better to be embodied. I feel like I have more access to my resources, access to my heart, and my energy is more sustained when I'm embodied. So start to kind of appreciate how the system works. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry, the folks on Zoom can't hear, and it's probably frustrating.
Oh, okay. So she's just saying that every time there's some discouragement, there isn't a celebration of coming back. There's discouragement at having gone away in the first place. So that's okay. And we can just notice that, okay, that takes energy. Every time we're discouraged or frustrated with ourselves, just a slight shift. Yeah, yeah.
Anything else?
Yeah.
Do I need that? It's not working? Or...
Yes, you do.
All right.
You will be told if you don't.
Okay.
This is really quick. I'm curious about, I don't know if it'll be quick, actually, sorry. When we talk about how we are supposed to concentrate, well, not how, but like we seem to give valor towards one form of concentration over a form of concentration which lends itself to kind of flittering around. And I spend a lot of time, or I have spent a lot of time, working problems out in which I'm not sure if it would be considered, like the way that I'm attacking a problem would be considered, I'm using the word valorous and I don't know why, but would be considered in a Buddhist type of way. But that's how so much of our life, that's how so much of society kind of moves forward in its own way. And I'm curious as to when you really truly try to draw the line as to are you supposed to actually be how are you actually thinking at this moment, and how are you supplying your energy? But once you get beyond that gray area, there's still this area which is, you're not in the white anymore. You're kind of in the not great area, but it's productive in its own way. And I struggle with that, you know, okay, I'm not loving my life right now, but I'm productive and something happens because of that. And I'm wondering if you can kind of talk to that, because what about that other area? We stigmatize it a lot, and I'm curious about that.
Mm-hmm.
Did that make sense?
A bit. I'm not sure I totally
okay.
Get it, but thank you for trying to articulate it. But that that productive, kind of maybe more goal-oriented problem-solving way to use our minds, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think there's any problem with that. I think if we're aware of our attention and our kind of our resource of energy, we'll notice when it starts to get really strained. Yeah, we can problem solve. We can turn our attention towards something that needs addressing and think through it and come up with solutions. But when we start getting strained, we're likely attached to some kind of result or outcome or, yeah, so we can watch that. Yeah, we can watch that. When it gets strained, we can invite ourselves to, we can still be aware and attentive and still do what we're doing, but it comes from a very different place than when, I've got to get this, sorted out. So is it possible to do the same activity, but with a different, almost attitude, motivation, approach? All those things are what affect our energy. Yeah. Does that make sense? So it's not really the problem solving. It's kind of our reliance on just that level of our being for everything. Because it doesn't solve everything. But when it's connected to our truest motivation, to our body, then it becomes really powerful. Yeah, it's not kind of spinning off on its own. It actually can become very integrated and powerful, but not addictive.
Yeah,
not like we're using the same tool for every.
I will note that there are definitely times when my brain is spinning just because I have 8,000 things going in my head.
Yeah,
but then I let it go. I don't so much turn it off. I say, I'm going to let it do its thing right now because, and I'm going to myself, my mind will just ignore it. It's okay for me to be at peace right now because it's going to figure things out by itself. And I don't have to be there for that. Like, it's just going to it's going to make it happen. Anyways. So
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think that's fine. I think we get into struggles when we start to try to turn it off. But if we turn our primary attention elsewhere and just let that spin happen in the background, that can be really skillful. Yeah. Yeah, Amy, and then we'll close.
Yeah, thank you for the talk. I can't usually get myself up here, so trying to have that courageous quality. I've been noticing that I have increased trust in the practice and how you were talking about the connection between trust and energy and enthusiasm. Really kind of noticing that. And then at the same time, lacking that same trust in myself within the practice, if that makes sense, or even just within my daily life, like, oh, here comes craving, or like, so it's kind of this weird, like, there's energy and enthusiasm in one way and this really draining quality in this other way. I was just curious if you have any advice or thoughts.
Self-doubt is extremely draining. Yeah, it's extremely draining. I used to think about it as it's like someone just comes and pulls the plug out from your energy, right? Because it's like you're always trying to figure out, like, did I do it right or not right? Is this right? Is that right? Is this okay? Should I do this? Should I do that? It's a very busy mind state, but it's also like trying to figure out mentally some kind of certainty that we can't possibly figure out. Yeah, some kind of exact right way that we can't figure out. So that's a whole talk in and of itself. But just to notice how doubt drains us, and then in those moments when it's arising, coming back to some refuge or resource of practice, whatever that is for you, whatever arouses trust in other areas, maybe it's remembering, just remembering your capacity to be aware. Yeah? Oh, I can be here and I can remember that. And then that will strengthen every time you come back. Yeah? Maybe it's bringing mindfulness to the body. Maybe it's coming back to your intention. Yeah? All right, I don't know the exact thing to do. I don't know what's right. Don't completely trust myself. But what's my deepest intention going into this? So those are all places where we can kind of reconnect with something kind of more fundamental than the swirls and pulls of doubt. Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. Do we have announcements or any? Next week. Okay, good, good. All right. So. Thanks, everybody. Should we?
Carrie, yeah. For folks that are here, take a look. You know, we have our opening celebration on June 30th. There is a sign up sheet there.
Oh, great.
For potluck and
okay. Okay, perfect. So,
probably. It's on the website.
Okay, so you probably, I'll repeat it. So people in the room probably heard, but Cubbo's mentioning our opening celebration on June 30th, so plenty of opportunity for a joyful effort to be engaged in volunteering to help with that. So there's a physical sign-up here, and then on the website, there's a place, so folks online, if you'd like to contribute to that. You can always use that. You can always use your energy in that way, various forms of volunteering. So thank you for considering that. And thank you for giving thought to Donna as a reflection or a practice in general. So your support helps Seattle Insight continue to be here and inhabit our space and offer more opportunities for practice in this and sharing this beautiful space. It also supports my livelihood, so deeply appreciate anything you feel moved and can offer joyfully. Yeah. So I hope to see you next week, and we'll talk a little bit more about low energy states, like I mentioned, how to navigate those specifically. Okay, so if you have a moment, we'll just close the very, very brief intention. So no need to shift your posture if you're comfortable. But you might just form the intention whatever way feels natural and right to you, that the benefits of our practice be shared. So whatever inspiration, connection, understanding, whatever fruit may have come out of our practice time together, the sitting, the listening, the inquiring, may it be of great benefit to ourselves and to all beings everywhere without exception. May each of us and all beings be well in body and mind. May each of us be free of confusion and fear. May we take care of ourselves and each other with ease. And may we move in the direction of greater wisdom, compassion, and freedom in our own unique ways. Many thanks to Ken, Ben, Cheryl, Dave, Cubba, Tamira, Jackie, and all of the volunteers, Adam, many, many others who helped bring this night into being, this gathering into being. And those online, if you'd like to unmute and say good night.